The overwhelming majority of the calcium in soils is found in unavailable forms or insoluble forms. And so, yes, it's there, and some of that shows up on a soil test, which is why a soil test is not a reliable indicator of how much calcium the crop roots are actually going to see, because it was never designed to measure the likelihood of a crop response to calcium. It was designed to do other things.
This is the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. Yara is the global leader in crop nutrition knowledge and the leading producer of quality fertilizer products. The podcast is intended to facilitate the transfer of knowledge for farmers and crop advisors, improving farm profitability and environmental sustainability. With Yara, knowledge grows.
Thanks for joining another edition of the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. You know, we're here to grow your knowledge, and I'm going to take a role. We're going to do a little role playing today. I have Dr. Steve Petrie, who is our Director of Agronomic Services, and we have Devin Clark, who's our Permanent Crop Manager here in North America, and we're going to do a little role playing. I'm going to be the grower in this case, and I'm going to get some advice and grow my knowledge. Now, from a grower standpoint, I'm probably on, if there's a scale of uneducated versus educated, I'm probably a 0.5 or a 0.2 on that scale. So I know there's a lot of growers out there that know a lot, but we're going to try to dispel some myths and grow our knowledge here. We're going to talk right now, let's say I'm growing permanent crops, and I've been told by my advisor, Devin Clark, that I need to open up my soils. And he has advised me that I probably should put on some lime and maybe some gyp. And I go, yeah, okay, I've done that in the past. I've you know, it's kind of the norm this time of the year. What first of all, Devin, why do I need to open up my soils? What does that mean, open up my soils?
Yeah, so Scott, that's kind of a catch-all term in a lot of cases that gets floated around kind of the ag industry. And at the end of the day, what would lead to a comment like that would be recognizing maybe some water infiltration problems in the field, maybe some just general lack of vigor in some cases in certain blocks, kind of maybe understanding some site-specific histories as far as, you know, excess levels of certain nutrients that may be antagonistic with calcium. And those would probably be the primary functions. And then also backing that up with maybe an observation from a soil sample that shows that you are low on calcium among other nutrients.
And I would add that occasionally you'll see actually surface crusting in a soil that is visually obvious that you get reduced water infiltration because of that surface crust, and it forms an impervious layer, and the water, instead of percolating into the soil, just runs across the surface. And rainfall, irrigation, whatever the source, it's not effective in that case because it's running off instead of percolating in.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, those same fields that you may be seeing those infiltration problems with, when those soils do actually dry, in a lot of cases, you will see that crusting that our famous Dr. Steve has communicated to us.
And I would assume by opening up that soil this time of year, as we're waiting for moisture to come in via the rains and the snow runoff, that's going to allow that water to percolate deeper into the soil and just add for overall soil health. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely correct. And then, you know, also if you have the ability to quote unquote open up that soil, you know, coming from maybe a saturated or crusted environment, then you have created an ability for oxygen to move into that soil rhizosphere more effectively and allow those plant roots that do not have access to the outside air because they are buried in the soil to be able to breathe quote unquote below that soil surface.
Got it. Now, I have also listened to my trusty advisor, Devin, and he has advised me to get a soil sample done. And I'm looking at my soil report, and you're telling me that I'm low on calcium, but my soil report doesn't jive with what you're telling me. My soil report says I have oodles of calcium, that I am not deficient at all at calcium. So why are you trying to sell me more calcium, Devin?
Yeah, no, and this is a great contrast to what we were just discussing, you know, the scenario where you are potentially in excess of calcium by that soil sample that you've just taken. And so, you know, one of the problems that we need to recognize in that scenario where we have excess levels of calcium is the ability of that calcium to be plant available. Right. And so not all of that calcium and frankly, a very small degree of that calcium that exists within that soil is actually going to be plant available. And Dr. Steve, he's my in-house farm advisor here. That's going to give us maybe some more technical background for that. But we have to recognize that particularly for the crops that we have a high calcium requirement for, you know, in California here, we have tomatoes is a big one. We have apples, you know, cauliflower. We have, you know, a lot of our stone fruits is a big one. You know, looking at some of the characteristics that we're trying to strive for in our production goals would be fruit firmness, you know, shelf life, and those kinds of quality features that are going to be heavily dependent on calcium.
So tell me this, my soil report says that I have plenty of calcium in the soil. Can't I wave my magic wand and somehow make all that existing calcium that's in the soil plant available? Why is it not plant available, and how can I make it plant available?
No. Short answer is no.
No, you can't. Okay. Why is that?
And that's because the calcium is found in a form that is basically insoluble in most soils. The overwhelming majority of the calcium in soils is found in unavailable forms or insoluble forms. And so, yes, it's there, and some of that shows up on a soil test, which is why a soil test is not a reliable indicator of how much calcium our roots, or not our roots, the crop roots are actually going to see. Because it was never designed to measure the likelihood of a crop response to calcium. It was designed to do other things. So it's a good indicator of relationship between calcium and potassium, calcium and magnesium, the total base saturation, and so forth. We can use those numbers to get an idea about how much lime we might need to apply if we have an acid soil. But none of that touches directly on calcium solubility and available to plant roots. And short answer, it's in the soil, but it's insoluble, and there isn't anything we can do about it in a practical sense.
So I need to add supplemental calcium is what you're telling me.
You may need to.
Okay.
And the soil test is not a reliable indicator of whether you need to.
How do I find out whether I need to?
I wish I had a good answer for you. And this is unfortunate, but one of the things that I've encountered over the years of working with calcium is that the soil test doesn't work. You need to look at the points that Devin made a moment ago, and that is those crops which have a high calcium demand, and at certain times of the growing cycle when they have a high calcium demand, and make sure that you don't have the crop be deficient for calcium, either overall or at those key demand times. And don't look at the soil test to know that. We're looking at something that we don't measure very well in the soil. There are some ways to measure it. They're still in research stage and they're not in commercial use yet. There are some things being done, but right now, if you have a crop that demands a lot of calcium, the examples that Devin talked about, potatoes, some of the other root crops, you probably should look at supplemental calcium applications in a soluble form and not worry about what the soil test is and not worry about what your gypsum or your lime program was, because those are not soluble sources, at least as soluble as the calcium nitrate that we would recommend.
Now, Dr. Steve, so when we were building out this theoretical program for our customer, Scott War here, we were talking about, you know, those critical physiological timings of applying supplemental calcium in some crops. And let's take maybe just stone fruit in general. Let's kind of lump those together a little bit maybe. And you made a good point about, you know, how calcium partitioning relates to transpirational activities, right? That plants and those tissues tissues and their ability to transpire can be very important in understanding how effective our calcium supplementation might be, correct?
Correct. That calcium is, we'll start out at the soil solution. And one of the most important concepts of plant nutrition, and I stress this every time I can, the only nutrients that are available to a plant are those which are in the soil solution. And the only exception would be, of course, a foliar application of nutrients. But otherwise, whether we talk native nutrients, nutrients that come from fertilizer, whatever source, they have to be in the soil solution because nutrients are taken up from the soil water through the root, get moved up through the root, through the stems, out the petioles, and the water evaporates from the leaves. In that process, the calcium simply flows along with that transpirational water. And when the water evaporates, the calcium stays behind in the leaves. Now, I'm simplifying it a little bit because it's a little more complex than that. But the calcium goes along for the ride. And so it ends up, most of the water evaporates from a plant from the leaves. And so the calcium in the leaves tends to be higher than other parts of the plant. We think about a crop like tomato, stone fruits, melons, other crops that have some type of layer or physiologically restricted water movement, therefore we get less water movement, we get less calcium movement because the calcium is just going along for the ride.
Yeah. So when we're talking about maybe like a green or immature fruit scenario, right, where that organ itself may have more ability to transpire earlier in its life cycle versus later, right? As that fruit matures, the ability to move calcium into those cells is next to nil, I believe, right?
Yep.
And so if we have a crop that does have a high calcium requirement, then we need to be cognizant of those time periods where that organ itself is actually still transpiring to as much of a degree as it can to be able to target those timings and make sure we're getting that supplemental calcium in at those times, right?
Great point. And take advantage of those different physiological stages. In this case, it'd be put that calcium on earlier than what we might think in the life cycle of whatever crop we're talking about. I've done more work on potatoes, and a potato tuber is predispositioned to develop internal defects when it's very small, the size of the tip of your little finger. And yet we don't see the manifestation of the calcium deficiency until weeks or months later. And it's the same thing with other crops, that we predispose those crops to exhibit deficiency symptoms early in the life cycle of that particular part of the plant.
Again, I'm the grower that's trying to learn here. And you told me that the calcium in the soil, most of it is not plant available. But if you put plant available calcium on as a supplement, that if it's in solution, it gets taken up through the plant. And as the plant transpires, the calcium is left behind in the leaves. So logically, in my mind, I'm thinking maybe that is a good way to understand whether I have enough plant available calcium by doing a tissue sample. Is that correct? If I find calcium in the leaves, that means that there was enough calcium in the soil that was available and they got taken up by the plant. Is that accurate?
It's maybe a farm advisor question. You know, we tend to utilize tissue samples as sort of a gut check along the way throughout the growing season to just recognize whether or not the programs that we've put into place, from an application standpoint, coupled with, you know, what is existing in the soil is really meeting our demands. But maybe, Steve, you can dive into that a little bit deeper.
Calcium it's not unique among nutrients, but it is a little unusual in that older leaves tend to have lower concentrations of most nutrients compared to young leaves. If we look at nitrogen, we look at other nutrients, the younger leaves tend to have higher concentrations than the older leaves. That's reverse is true for calcium. The older leaves tend to have higher calciums. In fact, if you take a particular part of a tree and take samples throughout the growing season, the older the leaf, The longer it's been on the tree, the higher the calcium level will tend to be over time. And so having a specific value of, pull a number out of the air, 2.2% calcium, well, that may be adequate at a certain stage. It might be deficient at another stage because we have to know the stage of growth and so forth. So it's not easy to interpret calcium the way it is some of the other nutrients.
To try to help Scott, the grower, you know, better wrap their mind around, okay, so I have all this calcium, but I don't really have this calcium. It's not available to my plant. And I'm trying to do foliar applications and soil applied. And, you know, how do I even really understand, A, where to start in assessing a program that has been brought to me, right? Or building my own program, right? Relative to what I'm trying to, you know, get out of this crop and what my goals are. And so in a lot of cases, you know, what we really like to come back to, you know, as an advisor, which I have been previously, you know, and as a manufacturer representative in this case too, is really being cognizant of what documented crop demands are, right? Looking at all of the work that has been done before us to understand what the total needs of a particular crop are based on what our yield or quality objectives are. And so in many crops, we can have kind of definitive numbers to shoot for in being able to have supplied to our crop, and starting with that fundamental metric to then build programs off of and say, okay, well, we're in excess levels of calcium here. You know, we have a base saturation that is maybe 80%, and we have, you know, a crop demand for our yield target of 150 pounds of calcium, right? Maybe I can back off of what my supplemental calcium is, and maybe I can shoot for 100 pounds of soluble calcium applied at particular stages where I know I'm going to get the best benefit from that, right?
Exactly. And the one of the key points that you've made previously and is that at certain stages of growth, it's more important to be sure we have adequate calcium than it is at other stages. And that's true of most nutrients, that do not have a uniform demand, the crops don't, for all nutrients at the same rate throughout the growing season. If certain nutrients are demanded at certain stages of growth, and we want to make sure we've got adequate calcium at those stages so that we can meet that demand, or the crop can meet that demand.
Am I at any risk of toxicity issues if I over-apply calcium? If I overshoot the moon, am I stubbing my toe?
No. Calcium is unique, and I've talked to kind of a calcium guru for tubers, for potatoes, Dr. Juwan Palta, University of Wisconsin, and he makes the comment that there is no such thing as a calcium toxicity, that calcium simply cannot be toxic. And one of the points that we've not made during this conversation, but it's worth making it in passing, is that calcium plays a huge number of roles in plant physiology, some of which are directly related to crop quality, things like membrane and cell wall integrity, so that we have a fruit that doesn't split and we have good keeping and storage characteristics. But calcium also plays a key role in a number of other factors like heat stress, clearly shown through fundamental research as well as in the field research. Calcium helps plants mitigate the effect of hot weather. Cold stress, the same thing. Environmental stresses like salinity and sodicity can both be minimized through good calcium management. Physiological disorders like blossom end rot of tomatoes and melons and peppers, potatoes, there's a whole host of physiological disorders of these crops that are all related to not necessarily insufficient calcium in the soil, but not enough available soluble calcium in the soil, and not enough of that getting into the right part of the plant at the right time.
You know, I think, Steve, we've talked about this in the past. You know, there's macronutrients and micronutrients, and calcium is not a macronutrient, but it is a primary nutrient. It's very important, and we don't want to minimize its importance just because it's under that label micronutrient.
Well, and actually calcium is considered a secondary nutrient. And this is interesting. There's a little history in here, but nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium are considered major nutrients or macronutrients. Calcium, sulfur, and magnesium are considered secondary nutrients. And then we have the micronutrients. If you look at plant uptake of nutrients, calcium is usually the third most common element taken up by plants, way more than phosphorus, 10 times as much calcium as phosphorus in a lot of situations. And there's obviously variability about plant part and stage of growth and all this. But if you look across a broad spectrum of crops, there's much more calcium taken up than phosphorus. Yet phosphorus is considered a major or a macronutrient. Calcium is only secondary. One of my crusades for the last 10 years has been to get people to think about calcium as a macronutrient or a major nutrient. When we think about all that it does physiologically, we think about the amount taken up, we think about the importance for yield and quality, it truly is a major nutrient.
Well, thank you, Dr. Steve and Devin Clark, for this great discussion on calcium and how it's important, and of course, our lobby, or Dr. Steve's lobby, to make it a major nutrient because of its importance. We're going to continue this discussion next Tuesday with Devin and Dr. Steve as we talk more about the application of calcium, where we're going to get into the four R's of nutrient management with calcium. So look forward to that. In the meantime, we hope that you go out and grow your knowledge.
You've been listening to the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. For more information about our company, please visit us at www.yara.com or yara.us, or for Canada, yaracanada.ca.